been a long day. Grab a beer and sit back. It's time for Brew Talk. Here's Scott, Chad, and the Brew Doctor himself, Dr. Michael Mosier.
Good Tuesday evening. Brews Day.
Brews Day.
I'd like to say. This is Brew Talk. We're live from the Aloe Fiber Studios here in lovely downtown Greeley, Colorado. What a day it's been. It's beautiful.
It is.
The weather's great.
It's gorgeous outside.
Other than the little hazy smoke we got going on.
Yeah. And then tomorrow the rain will come and that'll wash most of it away, I think.
Good. I like that.
So.
I like the rain. I know we've had a lot of it, but I still haven't had to turn my sprinklers on for my lawn, which I also like. What are we drinking here, Doc? Brought a nice table beer in from Rule 105.
Well, I thought we'd go with something kind of malty, not anticipating what would be our review beer, but I'm kind of glad I did bring something completely off-style.
Opposite of what we brought, yeah.
So I brought in Rule 105's Red Fox Irish Ale. This is a very malt-forward red ale, a little bit sweet on the finish. And quite drinkable, I think, and it goes down pretty well.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I really like it.
Yeah, it's similar in style, I would say, to kind of like a Scottish. In fact, Scottish and Irish ales are pretty similar. Mm-hmm. The difference is where the bitterness comes in, whether it comes in at the start or at the end of the drink. So.
But I like this because it does have that bitterness. And mm-hmm. there are some Irish reds that are overly sweet, I feel.
And this one's
And this
not.
Doesn't. No, this is really nice.
Right. It's not quite as dry as like a Smithwick's.
Sure.
Or a Killian's Irish Red, mm-hmm. that one, if you remember those beers. But it is, I think, quite a really good and quaffable. Drink for an evening.
As Micah's eyes light up at the quaffable word. I think he likes that word.
And word of the day.
You're feeling a little run down, you said.
I
you
am.
Got the shingles shot, huh?
Yeah, I had to go in for my booster shot for shingles and did that yesterday. And boy, it does kick you really hard. And at least it does me.
Yeah.
It's my body's reaction to it. So today it's just been dragging. It's like somebody drained all my blood out of my body.
Oh, geez.
One of those kinds of dragging things.
Well, I certainly don't look forward to getting my shingles shot then.
Well, but I really don't want to get shingles.
That's true.
And they say it happens in 30% of the people. And of those that get it, they say that up to 30% of those people that do get shingles, the pain never goes away.
Is that right?
And I'm like, okay, well, give me the shot. I mean, those are odds I don't like, so.
I know my wife had it one time, and she said it was one of the most painful things she's ever experienced.
That's what they say.
Just like a little brush against the skin sent her in agony.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yes, I guess feeling a little run down is way better than
feeling pain
that'll never go away.
Well, or even pain for like 2 weeks or a month or whatever it takes to get over the shingles, so. And I know I did have chicken pox when I was a little kid, so
right.
I know I've got that zoster virus or whatever it is inside me.
I don't know if there's enough beer in the world to take care of that pain.
I don't, well.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge
accepted. You do own a beer store.
I do, but at least at this stage of the game, I don't have to worry about getting the shingles, so we're good to go.
That's right.
So what's going on with the tavern this week?
Oh, you know, been kind of a busy week for us. We've got just gearing up for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got Memorial Day coming up, which we're actually going to close down on Memorial Day, give our staff some time to celebrate with family and friends, and then I'll come in and kind of get the patio cleaned up and ready to go for summer.
So. I know, right? It's so nice. It's probably the best place to go is to
Absolutely.
Sit out on the patio,
sit on a patio
and eat dinner. Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
It's one of our favorite things to do, find a patio, especially in weather like today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was not too hot. There was a nice little breeze kind of blowing through the patio. We had a staff meeting earlier, and we were all sitting out there, and it was wonderful.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, it was a little hazy from the smoke.
But true.
Not terrible. Not like
terrible.
It was a few days ago. So
I know there's an air quality warning out, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't seem to bother us too much. Although I think my allergies are a little more active than they normally are this time of year.
And I can't tell because I'm, like I said earlier, all my blood streamed out of my body.
You've got something else going on.
So, but I don't smell the smoke, and that's kind of nice.
Yeah, remember that's what we talked about earlier, too. It's nice you don't smell it.
Yeah, I remember when you had the forest fires here in Colorado, you could smell the smoke in the air, and here you can't smell it. But it still amazes me that it came all the way down from Canada.
Yeah, just the way the airflow.
Isn't that insane how far away? So I wonder what it was like when Mount St. Helens blew here.
Well, I kind of remember that here, you know, where we saw ash falling on your cars and you could write stuff in the ash on your cars, which was really strange for us. I think I was in elementary school when that happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we kept going, what's all this stuff falling from the sky? It's snowing in the... But no, it was the ash.
Doesn't taste like snow.
No, it didn't. Mom, stop eating that.
You got to toughen yourself up, though.
That's right.
It's just rocks.
Well, and, you know, we had a few summers ago where the fires were so bad here and the smoke was bad. There was ash everywhere.
Oh, yeah. We'd have it all over our patio. We had to go sweep it off.
Yeah.
So
when I, with as smoky and hazy it is here, I can't imagine what it's like in Canada right now. I mean,
oh, I know.
It's got to be comparable to that summer we had here.
Well, they need some rain up there and take care of it right away.
Take care of that and kind of.
I mean, we've had a lot of rain here.
Yeah.
Let's send some up there and take care of that forest fire.
Let's share the wealth and get some up there.
So
we kind of talked a little earlier, and we want to do a deep dive into maybe the origins of beer, kind of figure out where beer came from, what we understand where beer came from, and maybe a little beerstery, if you will.
Hmm. Interesting.
The history of beer.
Is that the word of the day?
I don't know.
Beerstery?
I'm making this up as I go along here.
I can go with it.
Beerstery. Yeah. We'll just make that the word of the day. So I kind of did a little reading, and what I found was beer was most likely, just like most alcoholic beverages, discovered by accident. So before the show, we were talking a little bit about where, you know, we see the animals. When fruit falls from a tree, we see a lot of animals kind of waiting around for that fruit to sit around and start rotting and fermenting a little bit. And we've all seen the National Geographic videos, I'm sure, where with drunken monkeys and the drunk elephants stumbling around.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying that early humans probably did that as well from watching the animals.
Yeah, so some of the theories I've read say that from watching the animals do that, they probably early humans probably did that too. Just because they wanted to see what was going on and then noticed it didn't taste too bad and it kind of made them feel euphoric and probably also meant that they had an awful lot of extra calories in them.
Yeah, easy to get calories.
Easy to get calories, and that was a good thing. So I think early humans were probably predisposed to try to find that everywhere they went because it was a good thing. It made them have a little bit of euphoria.
Yeah.
And you know, take the pressures off of the everyday life.
Yeah.
And, you know, the commute home was always terrible, right?
Right. Absolutely. So. That's right.
So.
It was a long day at the office.
Long day
you just
got to
sit down and relax with some fermented fruit.
Sounds like a Gary Larson cartoon in there someplace. But
it probably is. Yeah. So what I read was most likely the same thing happened with beer.
Mm-hmm.
So what we know of beer is three things. It's a grain. It's water and it's yeast. And then essentially that's beer, right?
In a nutshell, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, broken down to its simplest form.
Correct.
So what I saw was most likely there was some bakers doing some baking or some farmers doing some baking with their grains. And either the grains got wet or some bread got wet and in turn ended up fermenting. And they tasted it and decided, hey, this tastes actually kind of good, and got that same euphoric feeling that they were getting from the fruits and things. So, you know.
Maybe associated that feeling with being spiritual.
True.
Or something like that, which elevated the experience even more. So, and I think that's probably, I think you're right. I would be surprised if it was a discovered thing. I think it was an accidental thing.
Right. A gift from the gods, right?
Mm-hmm. A gift from the gods.
So And that's probably where it all started.
I think so. There, I mean, if you look at domesticated grains, you know, they could say that they probably happened, you know, 8 to 10 to 12 plus thousand years ago. Mm-hmm. And beer didn't start right then. It started afterwards.
Afterwards.
So you can imagine, you know, people now are aggregating into society. And they're storing all of their grain together, and one of the silos gets wet.
Yeah.
And, well, still got to use it.
So we got to do something with it, right?
Because we go
starve.
We spent
all this time. Yeah,
we'll starve if we don't eat it. So they figured out a way to eat it, and, well, that was a wonderful thing. So I think you're right. I think it was an accident that probably brought all these people together. And then civilization might have even picked up more from that. Hey, if we go live over there with those other people, we can do that to our grain.
That's right.
And now we can get that euphoric feeling as well. And that's a good thing. Let's go over there and get some
get
beer.
Some beer.
Rather than live here in our little teepee, we just don't have enough grain.
That's right.
To make beer.
So I also found that they think, in theory, there's evidence of the first official brewing where it's not just, you know, discovering or finding it accidentally, is credited to the early Sumerians, and they're thinking between 3,000 and 3,500 BC is what they think.
And there may be even some evidence that's indicating it's even earlier than that. But even so, at that time, they do have physical evidence.
They do.
That people were making beer. There's a byproduct in the brewing process called beer stone.
Okay.
And you can find that at the bottom of these vats. When they dig up the, you know, do the archaeology and dig up the vats, they find beer stone in some of them, which could only have come from beer.
From beer.
And so that's how they know for sure it was being done there.
Right. I've also read evidence where they think in China that right around that same time, there's some evidence that they were potentially brewing beer as well. Probably not with the same type of grains. Probably rice. But, you know, you can brew beer with any kind of cereal grain, can't you?
That's correct. You can, anything that has starch in it, you can make beer out of. So even potatoes, you could make a beer out of potato if you wanted to.
Really?
So, you know, you'd have to also have some enzymes in there to convert the starch into sugars. And some other things like that. But yes, you can. Any starch thing, and we typically associate that with grain.
Right.
It doesn't have to be with grain. It could be with any other thing.
Interesting. I've never heard of a potato beer. Does anybody brew a potato beer?
No, but now that I'm bringing it up, I have tried to make one from mashed potatoes.
Okay.
Just add some mashed potatoes to a normal grain bill and see what it does. And all it does is just up the alcohol just a little bit because there's really not much flavor in the potato to impart it into the beer.
Like I just always associated potatoes with vodka. So
Because in vodka, you do that same exact step, and then you just distill the alcohol away.
Right.
And then it concentrates it so it's easier to transport. And then, of course, you dilute it. Well, you should dilute it back out before you drink it.
Right. Or you do that blind test, right?
You're right.
If you're blind, it's too strong.
It's too strong. So I've even seen some evidence of beer production from the, you know, those tablets, those clay tablets that they used to write on with cuneiform writing. They found a couple of those tablets, and one of them is a receipt. That somebody was writing down a receipt that they received so much money for so many vats of beer.
Oh, really?
And it's listed in the cuneiform tablet, and that one is found in the city of Ebla, and right around that same time.
Oh, really?
So
that's interesting.
You know, where people were actually now brewing it and manufacturing it
as a business,
and
rather
then
than
selling
just
it. Yeah.
Because a lot of what I saw, I thought it was more for religious reasons. So a lot of the original brewers were priestesses because it was a female thing. So I think that's what I saw, but I didn't.
Right. And that's very true. Most of the brewers at that time, it was a, if you think about the the duties that were normally done. If you're making consumable goods, foods and drinks and stuff like that, that was usually done by females, and then sure. priestesses and that kind of thing, where the men were working the fields and
right.
stuff like that.
Or hunting.
And so the most of the brewing actually stayed within the female roles for much of history. So we don't realize that. Every time you think you see a picture of somebody who's an old, you know, like from the Middle Ages, and it's some monk who's doing
right.
it. But
they didn't start brewing until much later.
Much, much later in the Middle Ages. You know, if you go back to like 300, 400 AD even, it's still females brewing the beer.
Right.
Women brewing beer.
Which, you know, a little different than from what we see now. I mean,
right.
there are women brewers, but not near.
Not near as many. That's what the Pink Boot Society is all about, is trying to help encourage more women to get into this wonderful profession.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, some of the best beers I've ever tried have been made by the Pink Boot Society.
Yeah.
So I'm very much on board.
There are several very talented women brewers out there that I've had their product.
Yeah, at least here in northern Colorado, I've had quite a few from here. I know that back east, they're pretty powerful back there, too.
Yeah.
And they make great beer. So we shouldn't discount them. Yeah.
Which goes to the first written beer recipe. I don't know if you know this. You probably do, because you know you're the beer doctor himself. So the first beer recipe that was written down was found in a hymn to Ninkasi, who was the goddess of beer, from the Sumerians. And that was around 1800 BC.
Right.
And again, the priestesses to the goddesses wrote this homage and put the recipe for the beer on there.
And actually, they do. They found out what this hymn to Ninkasi was because it was written down, and they've tried translating it. And some of the parts of the hymn are missing, so they need to find other copies of it so they can fill in the blanks. But for the most part, it reads like you might see a psalm in the Bible.
Right.
And you just can imagine people sitting around and singing it together as a religious thing to sing while you're in church, right?
Right.
Or that kind of thing. And it talks about how the bread is baked, and then it's set out on the mat to dry, and then it's scooped up and put in a pot, and then water is added, and then it starts to ferment. Of course, I'm using words that they didn't know
right.
at the time, but it talks about the entire thing, the process, not how many cups of this to add to that.
Right. It's not an exact.
It's not exact.
Measures. And
it's basically, you can see it's a praise.
Yeah.
They're praising Ninkasi for this wonderful gift, and here's how the gift is made.
Which is also the name of a great brewery, isn't it?
Ninkasi Brewing Company has a great brewery.
Mm-hmm. And are they on the West Coast?
I think they're West Coast, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun. Let's take a break here, come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about what early beer was and how it's different from beer today. Stick around. Welcome back to Brew Talk, live from the Aloe Fiber Studios here on 1310 and 103.1 KFKA. We're talking a little bit about the origins of beer before we went to break. And that beer looked a lot different than the beer we have today. Not only was it probably much lower in alcohol, but the Sumerian version was more like a porridge made from fermenting a barley bread.
Right. And so you can imagine bread soup.
Yeah.
With little bits of crust floating around in it. And
Sounds really appetizing.
So you eat your beer with a spoon.
Well, in fact, I think the Sumerians are credited with inventing the straw to drink the beer so they could drink around the bread.
The news I saw was that the original straws started out being reeds, and then eventually, for those avid beer drinkers, became clay. Ooh. They made them out of clay with a little scoop at the end to capture and filter out more of those particles.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not getting it, but.
Well, we haven't tried fermented beer porridge, I guess.
We haven't.
It does. I'm with you, though. It doesn't sound real appetizing.
Well, and if you think about it then, too, back in those days, they didn't have like lightweight pots or
right.
or bottles or anything like that, right? So they had to pour it into these vessels called amphora, which are they're kind of teardrop shaped.
Okay.
And so you have to have a stand for them, otherwise they fall over.
Right.
And they're so big that if you were going to have beer, you'd put the beer in the center of the circle and everybody would grab a straw and sit around and you're all drinking from the same beer.
Yeah.
And you can just imagine where that goes with backwash.
I know. What's that on your lip there, guy? I need your herpes.
So, but I could easily see that, I mean, it was more of a social thing
right.
than anything else.
Right.
There's a couple engravings or seals that I've seen from the Sumerians. Where you can actually see that image where there's three or four people sitting around a vat and each one of them has a straw in their hand. And it was, it was time to drink the beer and talk business or something.
Yeah. Well, you just pointed out, so we say about 1800 BC was when the Sumerian recipe was found. But you said a little later.
Right. Not too far. After that.
There was up to 8 different recipes being brewed.
Yeah. The Code to Hammurabi even outlines how many different beer recipes that you could have. Some were made with barley and others you could have different kinds of grain in. Mm-hmm. So these were now all of a sudden government was getting involved in what you could make. They were trying to regulate, and they're thinking of ways to tax it and keep right. people honest and that kind of thing. And so even in the Code to Hammurabi, which is from about 1775 BC, they even had rules about those priestesses couldn't be seen at a local bar. They could only drink the beer that they made at the church. And so it was punishable by death if they
wow.
showed up in a bar and started drinking the beer at the bar.
So good enough to brew and serve in the religious ceremonies, but let's stay away from those bars.
Right, because you never know. I don't know what the reasoning was there. But
Well, I'm certainly glad those rules have changed.
I know, right?
I like to hang out at the bar and drink beer.
Right.
I can't imagine being... getting in trouble for that.
Well, it'd be kind of interesting, too, if you're sitting in a bar drinking your porridge or eating your porridge, and in walks your priest and priestess. And you're like, oh, no.
Oh, geez. this is awkward.
This is awkward. So, so I can understand there might have been some separation of religion from everyday practice.
Every practice.
And that also probably separated quality of beer from quality of beer.
Right.
The priestesses probably were allowed to make a certain kind of beer, and
everybody else
had to make a different kind of beer. And so it probably has something to do with that, too.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's really interesting to read up on the history. And then, of course, by then you even got the Egyptians making beer.
That's right.
And they're making 20 different recipes of beer.
20 different recipes.
Each one has a different purpose. One is cures your headache, one wards off evil spirits, one is payment for working, etc. So all the different beers, they were doing it in mass production, especially by the time they're building pyramids and things like that. One of the things they would pay people with was
beer.
And so you had to have an awful lot of beer if you need all those people.
Now that you mention that, wasn't there... was it Dogfish Head that tried to brew one of those Egyptian beers?
Mm-hmm. I think it was Dogfish Head, or maybe it was Brew Dog, one of the two.
I know there's been some breweries that have attempted it.
And I wonder what it would taste like. I really do. How do you know that you got the flavor just right?
Right. Of course you couldn't. I mean, you could just, again, because they probably don't have the the exact measurements.
Right.
You're looking at maybe ratios and... And can you get the exact grain? And is the grain, I'm sure now, is very much, much different.
Much, much
than
different.
Than what it was.
Yeah. Those heritage grains from way, way back then, I'm sure, were completely different than they are now. So it'd be kind of interesting to go back and have a culinary experience in the ancient Egypt. Eating things that you can't eat now.
Right.
It'd be kind of interesting to try.
Yeah, it would. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. The wheels are turning, Doc. The wheels are turning.
So you're thinking about making some beer porridge?
Beer porridge for a beer dinner one time.
For a beer dinner and just serving it with a spoon.
With some ancient Egyptian cuisine.
That could work. It could really will.
I'll have to do a lot of research to figure out what they were eating back then.
Probably a lot of fish.
A lot of fish, yeah.
Because they lived on the Nile. But I can't think of anything else that would be...
Probably stuff we don't want to eat.
Yeah, probably stuff we don't want to eat. That is true.
Is that something you would ever think about, maybe finding an old...
I've always liked looking at history and reading all about history and how things happened, you know, even more recent history and looking at it and it's like, oh, wow, I didn't know that that's how things happened. And I think it'd be really fun to do that. Especially come up with a recipe based upon what you're reading.
Right.
I know like George Washington had his own recipe for making beer. George Washington's had a big plantation and he needed to make a lot of beer. And so he had a recipe. It used molasses.
Hmm.
It really wasn't beer, but he used molasses and then diluted it with water and added hops and yeast to it to make this beer. So... people have tried to reproduce that, and it's really not that good.
Yeah.
But so I would imagine that if we go even further back in time and try to make one of these things, it probably is not that tasty compared to what we're
compared
doing.
To what we, you know,
right?
Because there's so many different things available now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and if you think about it, if you have a sweet bread and you let it ferment out, and then dilute it with water and try to filter out some of the goop and then eat it. What is it going to taste like?
Right.
It's probably going to taste like really thin bread pudding. Really, really thin bread pudding.
I know. There's probably some people I went to high school with that would... I might have made something similar to that in my locker in high school. Just a leftover sandwich that sat there throughout the year. I don't think anybody would have been brave enough to try it or...
So there's a couple questions that I've always had here. Like, you know, we talk about how the Far East, China and Japan, were starting to manufacture and make beers at that time. The same time that the Middle East was making beers with the Sumerians.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the... there was shared knowledge between the two cultures, or was it just a coincidental common discovery between the two? Because they both seem to have taken place around the same time, plus or minus, you know, 5 years.
Most likely it was kind of a combination, don't you think?
Well, I mean,
was there a lot of trading going on between the two?
I don't know, but I would imagine there is trading going on.
Much later in history, there's a lot of trading.
Yeah, they're like the silk trade
right.
and that kind of stuff. I can easily see that, but just don't have a clue.
Yeah. Somebody wanders from one. Do they wander that far, though?
Yeah, and with a big vat of beer
behind
them.
With a vat of beer, or at least the knowledge of how to.
Right. Well, I mean, I think if you were in that time frame, if you were living with your family unit, somebody in your family knows how to make beer.
Right.
Because beer is a staple.
Sure.
You know, a lot of times
much cleaner than water.
Yeah, and you're probably drinking a gallon of it a day.
Yeah.
So no matter who you're going with, they know how to make it, I would say.
Yeah.
And then could another culture have been traveling the other way and they bumped into each other halfway and said, hey, let's have a common dinner together.
And here, drink this. This is mine. And they go, oh, right. Hey, we have that. Here, drink this.
Drink this, and this is what we've got, and that's what you've got, and learn different things from each other. And that could be one of the things that probably happened.
Yeah.
But I kind of also think that it might have independently developed.
Sure.
Sure.
Just because that accident of leaving the bread in the...
Because that's not just going to happen. And
no.
If it happens once, it's not the only time it's happened.
Right. It probably happened thousands of times
right.
before somebody...
All over the world.
Yeah, before somebody all of a sudden didn't eat the bread right away, right. waited a couple days before they ate it, and then noticed...
And maybe it wasn't barley, but maybe it was corn.
It was corn. Or
rice or...
Exactly.
Whatever the grains they had available.
Because even in the Americas, we see a lot of independent generation of alcoholic beverages, particularly beer.
Sure.
So, like in South America, they were making chicha, which is corn
right.
that is converted into beer. We
yeah.
won't talk about how, but yeah. it's not
That's
a
another
pleasant,
show.
Yeah, it's not a pleasant
That's another
way.
Show.
But so you have multiple cultures, and I just don't know if it was discovered independently. I kind of want to think it was.
Yeah. Interesting to think about.
Yeah.
We better take a break here if we want to get to our review beer.
Well, I think we want to.
Yeah, I think we want to. So stick around, come back, and find out what we're reviewing this week. We'll see you soon. Welcome back to Brew Talk on this lovely Brews Day evening. It's time to review a beer. I brought this one in. It comes from Crooked Stave Brewery, which is a top brewery on my list. I love a lot of the stuff they do. Mm. A lot of the stuff they do is with wild yeast and, mm-hmm. and barrel fermentation and things like that. This one, though, is a New Zealand-style IPA called Southern Cross. Comes in at 5.8% ABV. It's double dry hopped with Nelson, Riwaka, and I'm going to blow it again. What's the third one?
Motueka.
And other than that, there's not a whole lot of information on the Crooked Stave website about this beer. It's a newer one to me.
I haven't seen
so
it before.
Initial thoughts, Doc?
Well, it pours with a beautiful head on it. And definitely it's a... what I'd call a hazy IPA or an East Coast IPA.
It is, yeah.
A very hazy.
And, very hazy.
The first thing I notice on the nose, it's very juicy.
Mm-hmm. You can definitely tell the double dry hop.
Right. You can tell there's a lot of fresh hops in that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool. It's got a little bit of a orangey, citrusy kind of aroma. And I haven't really had a chance to sip it yet, but that's where I'm at now.
Yeah. First thought on my first sip... It's not your typical hazy flavors.
Right.
To me, it's more of the West Coast, the dankness,
spicy.
Those kind of descriptors that are normally with a West Coast IPA. So is that due to the hops or the type of hops?
I think that
you said you were only familiar with two of them.
Right. I'm only familiar with Nelson Savon and Motueka, which are both New Zealand hops. The Riwaka, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know that Motueka is a little citrusy lime kind of aroma and flavor. And the Nelson Savon is similar citrusy, little spicy notes in it. And I do get a little bit more spice in this. Compared to like what I might see in a West Coast IPA, there's a lot of citrus and pininess, earthiness.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a little bit more of that earthiness in this one.
Yeah, for sure.
Unlike the East Coast where sometimes it can be just like you're drinking orange juice.
Right. Yeah. Very citrusy, very fruity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With a lot of those.
Or sometimes even floral.
Yeah.
And this one's not that way.
No. Which is not a bad thing because I tend to like those flavors on the West Coast side a little bit more in my IPAs.
Isn't that interesting,
nice,
though?
Pale color. Yeah, interesting.
It's interesting. And I'm saying that in a good way, not in a...
not your normal interesting.
I think it's interesting because we're tasting the flavors of what we might think on the West Coast, but we're visually seeing an East Coast IPA.
Does that confuse you?
Doesn't confuse me, but it makes me question.
Yeah.
You know, am I really tasting...
I know a certain person that we used to drink beer with didn't like beers that looked different than they tasted.
And there is something to be said with that. You know, if it tastes the different than it is appearing to you, then you tend to not enjoy it as much.
Right. And we always say in food that you eat with your eyes first, right? So if it looks appealing, chances are it's going to taste different.
Correct.
Or taste appeal or taste good.
Right.
But there is kind of a movement now where a lot of fine dining places are making food that looks different than what you're actually tasting. So they have some places will do a dish that comes out looking exactly the same. One's a dessert and one's a savory dish. And, you know, they look exactly the same.
Wow.
So they're a little trying to fool with your head a little bit there.
Yeah, and unfortunately for me, it's not confusing me. It's just meaning I'm not as enjoying it as much.
Yeah.
Like this, if I happen to be a really not a big fan of a hazy IPA, and then I get this, and it looks like a hazy IPA, instantly I'm thinking I'm not going to like it.
Oh, I'm not going to enjoy this.
And even if it does taste great, I'm like, not really enjoying that.
Not quite as good.
It's the double dry hopping that's giving it all that haze to this, and definitely you can tell this has been really hopped.
Yeah, really. Especially first thing we open, pour it, take a big sniff, and those hops kind of come right at you in the face, and they're there for sure.
It's got a nice amount of carbonation.
It does.
And
I like the color a lot.
Yeah, I do too. And it really, I think it's kind of smooth. It's a little bitter, but not overly bitter, which is good, because sometimes those West Coast IPAs will be a little bit too bitter on the finish.
Yeah, sometimes it's in your face.
Right.
Punch in the, palate blower.
Right. And, I can think of a few beers like that I actually don't dislike, but it's things that are, really riding on your palate at the end. And here it's not doing that.
Yeah. Not in your face, not, I could definitely eat something and still taste it.
Correct.
have a different beer, completely different beer, and be able to taste the differences.
Right.
So.
I mean, sometimes those double dry hopped IPAs and things will coat your tongue.
Sure.
So much so that you can't enjoy anything but what you're drinking.
Yeah. And I get a little bit of coating here, but not overly.
Right. I do get a little bit of the coating on my tongue as well, but it seems like it wants to go away quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, no, I'm really enjoying this beer.
Yeah. Not bad. Let's take another quick break here. When we come back, we'll let you know if it's quaffable and BrewTalk approved or what we think. Stick around. Welcome back to Brew Talk from the Aloe Fiber Studios here in lovely downtown Greeley. We just tasted Southern Cross New Zealand style IPA from Crooked Stave Brewing. Any final thoughts before we throw our rating out there?
My final thought is it's a halfway between an East Coast and West Coast IPA, and it's just got a lot of the great things you like about an East Coast and a lot of the great things you like about a West Coast all rolled into one.
I couldn't agree more. This is my first New Zealand IPA, I think, specifically designed as a New Zealand IPA, and I think I like it.
Uh-huh.
So let's go ahead and give it our ratings.
Okay.
1, 2, 3.
There you go.
There we go. We got two growlers, makes it BrewTalk approved and very quaffable.
We've got to find a rhyme for that word.
We do. Strictly for Micah's sake, because I love the way his face lights up every time we say it.
Quaffable's not close enough.
Quaffable, not close enough. you see Southern Cross out there by Crooked Stave. These are 12-ounce cans and a 6-pack. Give it a try. I think you won't be disappointed.
You know, I'm not disappointed very much when I see something from Crooked Stave. So
this is true.
Good brewery.
Yeah, I love a lot of the stuff they do. So, They do have a tap room in Fort Collins,
mm-hmm.
but I think their main brewery is in Denver somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in the Rhino district.
Is it Rhino?
I think it's Rhino. River North.
So many breweries moving all the time. Right? It's hard to keep track with where they're at. I'm trying to look on the can. And again, not a whole lot of information on there. But Crooked Stave, great brewery. Go out and check them out.
Mm-hmm.
As is Rule 105. What do we got coming up at Rule 105 this week?
So this week we've got trivia on Wednesday. On Friday we're having group karaoke.
Group karaoke. I like it.
Group sing-along, however you want to do it. We're going to play pretty famous and well-known rock and roll songs, and we're all going to sing them together. So
I like it.
Just something to, you know, swing the beer back
swing
and
the
forth.
Swing the beer back and forth.
And cheer the Friday. Saturday, we've got a big party coming in. It's my retirement party. And
congratulations, by the way.
Yes. And we're going to have John and Cynthia Farmer come in and play. They do a lot of 80s alternative music, and great time to be had by all. So
very nice. Come out and celebrate Doc's retirement mm-hmm. from UNC.
Please do.
At the tavern, we've got our Zwei Brew Dinner coming up on
Tuesday.
That's
right. That's coming up here pretty soon.
We've got a few seats left, so if you're interested in coming out and meeting some representatives from Zwei and, you know, tasting six of their beers along with five great courses of food, not to worry. They're not full pints, so mm-hmm. you will still be able to walk out of there. You're not drinking full 16-ounce beers.
Right.
It's enough to let you enjoy the beer and taste it with the food and compare and see how it goes. So there are still seats available, so give the tavern a call if you're interested in any of that.
And you might see both of us there, too.
Hey, very nice. Yeah.
So that's a great way to meet the radio hosts and get our autograph, right?
That's right. If anybody wants my autograph, you can come and see us at the beer dinner at Zwei next Tuesday. Right after the show.
Right.
Right after the show.
It starts at 7 o'clock, right?
7 o'clock.
Yep.
And hopefully the weather holds out and we'll have a nice patio night and,
oh, that's...
and have the roof open and dine and drink under the stars.
That even sounds better.
It doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Great weather today for patio for sure.
Do we know anything about potential plates or anything like that?
The menu is still in development. Mm. There's a couple things we're trying that... we're seeing if it'll work. But, you know, it's always a good time.
It's
always fun to come and talk to it's the same experience that you would get at a brewery.
Right.
You get to talk to a representative from the brewery, learn about the beer, learn about the process that went through in making it. But now you actually get food with it and can learn about the process that we go through when we pair food with beer,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know...
It's a much deeper dive into the flavors.
It is.
Than just going to a brewery and just sampling the different beers.
Right.
This is, like, you're really diving down into, here's the flavors I taste in this beer, and look how they complemented really well with
right.
this particular entree.
Or maybe contrasted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a bunch of different thoughts on what you pair with beer,
mm-hmm.
With food, and... And some it's complementary, some it contrasts, some it's taking the same flavors and melding them together. So it's we tend to try to do stuff that not everybody else does. So if you automatically think this pairs with a beer, we're going to try and do something a little
probably
different.
Not going to be what you're going to taste.
That's right. It'll still be great. I promise you.
Oh, it will. And I'll tell you this, going to those beer food pairing dinners, the evening flies by so fast. You sit down, you taste your first beer. Next thing you know, it's like, oh, I have to go now.
Yeah.
Where did the evening go?
Because what's better than friends sitting down, drinking beer, mm-hmm. having some great food, and having great conversation?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we try to do every Tuesday here with Brew Talk. We're glad you could join us. Join us next week. We'll taste some more beer. We'll talk about more beer. And who knows, maybe we'll talk about some beer festivals and other events coming up in the summer. Until then, I'm Chad. He's Doc. Have a great Tuesday evening. We'll see you next time.